Morning, everyone. I think it has to be said how incredible that was, that in 30 days we were able to get together to finish Shas. And if you look at the sign up, it was his students, his grand students. It was an incredible amount of women that got together to ensure that this was taken care of. And this is because Rabbi Kahn is so loved. We are up to the part of the program that now requires the source sheet. Sorry about the confusion before. If you do not have three sets of source sheets, raise your hands, and my GPAT students will come around to fill in the blanks. But we are now up to the Yom Iyun part of this program, where there will be a very, I promise, quick shiur being given by myself, Rabbi Berger, and Rabbi Nachbar, three colleagues of Rabbi Kahn. I really want to thank, first of all, Rinat and Rabbi Strauchler for hosting this joint event with Yeshiva University and GPATS, and thank the Kahn family for allowing us this honor. I am honored to speak at the Shloshim of Rabbi Kahn. I was privileged to be his student for both Gemara and Halacha at Stern and at GPATS for 5 years. I've been his colleague at Stern College for 18 years, and I've worked alongside him at GPATS for the last 8 years. And here's the truth about Rabbi Kahn. Rabbi Kahn was just different. We all know he could have taught Gemara at Yeshiva University to men, but he chose to come and teach Gemara to women at a time where most women did not learn Gemara. He could have taught Gemara to women on a low, watered-down level using source sheets, just Gemara and Rashi. But as you saw and Miriam demonstrated so beautifully, he chose to teach at the highest of levels using Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, so many Rishonim, and his favorite, always the Melchamot. Rabbi Kahn was different, and that's why he changed the world. You know, people keep remarking over the last month or more that he reminds us of Moshe Rabbeinu. Va'ish Moshe anav mikol adam, Moshe emet v'torato emet, or I'll add one, v'gam ha'ish Moshe gadol ma'od. But when I learned that Rabbi Kahn's middle name was Yosef, it actually really struck me. We're at the source sheets for Moshe and Yosef with my name on it. I'm Nechama Price. Hi. Because I actually think he's very similar to the stories, to some extent, or the lessons that we learn from both Moshe and Yosef. You see, Moshe and Yosef both go off the normal path. They create a unique story for themselves, a different identity, but they end up having a tremendous impact on the Jewish people. So let me explain by taking a journey a little bit into the lives of Moshe and Yosef. If you see in source number one in my chart, there's a lot of similarities to the beginning stories of both Moshe and Yosef. Both when they are born, they're born with a recognition of greatness. Moshe vatere oto ki tovhu, his mother recognized there was something really good about him, something different. When it comes to Yosef on the other side, as soon as he's born to the favorite wife, Rachel, that's when Yaakov turns to Laban and says, it's time for me to return back to Eretz Yisrael. The greatness of the two is marked by Chazal, as I gave you in the second row of both of them, that Chazal claims they were born Mahul, born with a Brit Milah. Both of them are then forced to leave their family and live amongst non-Jews for a period of time. Interestingly, as they're taken away, they have a sibling watching them as they are taken. They are both named by non-Jewish royalty, Bat Paro or Paro. They grow up in the palace of Paro for long periods of time. They work in non-Jewish environments, Moshe working for Yitro, Yosef working for Potiphar. They both end up marrying non-Jewish women, Tzipora and Asnat, both who, interestingly, are daughters of a Kohen, of a priest. And they're both, of course, appointed at the end to a leadership position that saves us all. But what strikes me about both of them is that in both of their initial stories, there are two ways to understand the emotions that they were going through. There's two ways to understand their journey. For both of them, you could understand possibly the question of, did they want to return to the Jewish people the whole time? Or did they actually take upon themselves a new identity along this journey? Did they want to be content in Egypt or in Midian? Was that the life that they chose for themselves for a period of time? I'd like to start with Yosef, who comes first chronologically, and then move to Moshe. If you start from the beginning of the story of Yosef after he is sold, there's hard to imagine these two paths because you might have thought, why would he want to be part of his family? If you look at source number two, it's very clear whether the brothers sold him or not. He believes they sold him. He says twice, Asher mechartem oti Mitzrayim, you sold me to Mitzrayim. Ki mechartem oti hena, you sold me here. And therefore Yosef's thought is that, of course, his brothers sold him. And not only that, even if they didn't, source number three, they didn't treat him very nicely when he lived at home. The psukim over and over emphasize vayisnu oto v'leichlul jabra l'shalom. They hated him. They couldn't speak nicely to him. Vayisifu otsno oto. They hated him. They hated him more. Vayiknu b'achav. They were jealous of him. And then pasach of dalet vaykchehu vayishlicho oto abora. They take him and they throw him into a pit. So one could understand if for a moment Yosef says, I need a new life. This is not the family I want to be part of. So soon afterwards, source number four, when he finally emerges out of jail to the palace of Paro, he gets a new identity. And you see in source number four, Paro gives him a new name, Safnat Paneach, which the Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam point out is actually Lashon Mitrim. It's a Mitri name. This is a new identity. And as the psukim go on, Vayitein lo as Asna Bat Potifara, he gets a wife from Egypt, and they have two children, Yosef Yulad Shnei Banim. And if you look at the psukim again, I underlined it for you. There's an emphasis. Kohen Own, she is the daughter of a priest. She is Yichus within Mitzrayim. This is the new family he has. And when I look at Pasuk Nun Aleph and Nun Bet at the naming of his children, Menashe the first, Ki Nashani Elokim es Kol Amaliv es Kol Beit Avi, thank you God for letting me forget all my troubles in my father's home. Sounds like he wants to move on. I want to move on. I want to forget. I don't want this life anymore. And only second, he says, Ki Efrani Elokim Be'eretz Ani, thank you for the success I have here. He wants to move on. He wants a new dream. He wants a new life. And as his life continues to develop, possibly his new dream is to lead in Mitzrayim. His new dream has dreams of leadership, but just not having to do with the Jewish people. And that would explain to me why he doesn't contact his family when he has the ability to do so. And it certainly explains source number five, the way he reacts when his brothers come down to Egypt. When finally they come down, Vayakireim, he recognizes them, Vayitznaker Aleihem, he disguises himself from them. If he wanted to return to them, you would think he would introduce himself, but instead, he tries his best to actually not allow them to know who he is. But it's worse than that. Vayidaberitam kashot, he's mean to them. He speaks meanly to them, and he's actually quite rude, and throws them in jail, and does a whole bunch of very nasty things that would seem to discourage a relationship. Pasuk Tet, the pasuk continues, Vayiskor Yosef et chalamot ha-shachalam lahem. The idea of remembering old dreams seems to imply he forgot his old dreams, and now he remembers them. He looks back and says, wow, I remember those old dreams that I have, because I've long replaced them with new ones. Radak even points out, Shechashvu lahamito v'pshitu v'shlichu labor v'machru la'evan. What's he remembering? He's not remembering necessarily the dreams, but he was remembering how terrible they were to him, how they threw him in a pit, how they sold him as a slave. You can understand if that's what his memories are. He would not want to be part of this family. So then I understand what he does. He throws them into jail to scare them to never come back. He gives them back their money so that if they wanted to come back, he would have an excuse to throw them into jail this time, because this time they are robbers, and therefore they would never come back. He tells them to bring down Binyamin because he knows his father will never allow them to do so. He even keeps Shimon in jail to show his father, look, I will keep one of your children, so don't you dare allow them to take down Binyamin. And therefore, the entire story can be understood as Yosef having a new identity now in Mitzrayim, leaving his family behind and wanting to leave them there, at least at this point in the story. The second version is, of course, the version that we find in Chazal, Yosef HaTzadik, Yosef who is righteous and wants to be part of Am Yisrael his entire life. You could understand it, source 6, based on the fact his special relationship with his father. V'Yisrael Ahavat Yosef Mikol Banav Ki Ben Zukinim. His father loves him more than everyone else. He is Ben Zukinim, that son that stays with his dad all the time and has a special relationship with him. The psukim continue, as I highlighted for you. He dreams of leading his brothers. They even say to him, Hamalotim Lochaleinu, Masholtim Sholban, and you really think you're going to rule over us? And his answer is yes, that's my dream. My dream is to be the head of this family. And therefore, one could understand this picture in a completely different way. Yosef always wanted to return to his family. Yosef's dreams are always to... Why don't we have to... teach this. We all know this. This is something that's so obvious. Says Rashi, Yosef, to teach us the righteousness of Yosef. Who Yosef Aretzo and Aviv, he's the same Yosef that shepherded his father's sheep. Who Yosef Shayab Mitzrayim and Asa Melech Vomebisiko. He's the same guy the whole time, same mindset, same righteousness. And we certainly see in the Psukim the righteousness of Yosef. He talks about God all the time. He says to Sarmashkim, Sarofim, and to Paro, God will get involved in interpreting your dreams. Not only that, in the Psukim, we see Hashem is with Yosef over and over again. Vayihi Hashem et Yosef. So clearly there's a connection to God. The question is there a connection to the family? If you look further in source number 8, we see this idea again. When Esha Potiphar is tempting him, and he says to her, I can't do it, and he uses the words, V'chatasi lalokim, I will sin to God. And Radak tells us there, Lahodiya sitkaso shel Yosef, once again, to tell us the righteousness of Yosef, he holds on to the values of his family, and this is something he cannot do. But I want to take it a step further within Chazal, which is not just that he holds on to the values of his family. He's always thinking about his family. He wants to return. He wants his family back. And therefore, the thoughts of his family are always in his mind. If you look in the Gemara Sota, source number 9, in that moment with Eshet Potiphar, the Gemara tells us, he looks and all of a sudden he sees his father's face, an image in the window. It's a question there. Did he see his father? Did he see himself? And he looked like his father. But the point is that he's thinking about his father. In this low moment of his life, the first thought he has is his dad. And you might say, where did Chazal get this from? And I gave you 2 psukim, which I think is the reason why Chazal claims this. Because when she does the action, she grabs onto his shirt and says, lie with me. I'm sure it brought back memories of the past, when the last time we have that idea, his own brothers, who grab his cloak, pull it off before they throw him into the pit. Everything reminds Yosef of his family, because all Yosef wants is his family. So to source 10, we have this idea in Chazal again, when he's trying to tell his father that he is alive, and he sends agalot to his dad. This tells us, he was reminding his dad, I remember even the last thing we learned together before we got separated, we were learning the Parsha of Egla Arufa, and therefore I'm sending you agalot. But we can see in the Pshat as well, that's certainly an idea found in the Midrash, but where do we see it in the Pshat? If you look at source number 11, the idea that Yosef never let go of his family was always thinking about his number of places. First, when Sarmashkim Sarofim wake up in the morning and they have these terrible dreams and they're very upset. And Yosef says to them in source 11, Halola Lokim Pitronim Sapruna Li, doesn't God know the answer? So why don't you tell me and I'll tell you what God has to say. You would think that if Yosef has realized that his dreams of leading the Am Yisrael, of leading his family, were false, he would say, don't tell me those dreams. I am the worst at interpreting dreams. I clearly don't know what I'm talking about. Please ask somebody else. But by the fact that he says, tell me your dreams, because I think I can interpret them. I think God has given me the ability to interpret. To some extent, he's saying, I still believe that the dreams I had and the interpretation I had of those dreams are true. And therefore, I believe that I can interpret dreams. Not only that, in that same incident, when he's talking to Sarah Mashkim, he says the following words. I'm still in source 11, Pasuk Tet Vav. He says, Kiganov ganati meres ha'arim. I was stolen from the land of the Jews. Vegam polo asiti mi umay, didn't do anything here. Ki samuati babor. And you could certainly explain that he means because they put me in jail. But bor means pit. He's thinking about the fact that his brothers threw him in a pit. He's always thinking about the past. He's always thinking about his family. So what do I do with the change of identity? Source number 12. Paro calls him Safna Paneach, but I think you can easily argue it's a name given to him by Paro. Safna Paneach. We call him Yosef. Throughout the rest of Torah. But not only that, if you look at Rasag and the Ramban, the 2 Mefarshim I gave you here in source 12, they both clearly think that this is a Jewish name. This is something that means Megales Funo, to reveal visions. Ramban asks, how is that possible? He got a Jewish Ivri name. And either it's because Paro said to him, where are you from? And named him according to that. And Paro maybe even knew the language. And that's why he was able to call him by a name that was appropriate to him. But if I ask the question about his Mitzri family marrying Safna Paneach, so again, I can say Paro forced him. This wasn't something he wanted. But in source number 13, the Yalkut Shimoni has this fantastic idea, which is actually so fascinating to bring us to our point, which is very possibly, says the Yalkut Shimoni, Dina got pregnant by her encounter with Shechem. And this child, this girl, somehow ended up in Mitzrayim. And this is the girl that Yosef ends up marrying. If you look at the Chaskuni inside with me, I like how he writes it. V'nistakelbo Yosef shaita bat bito shel Yaakov v'nasalo l'isha. He looked throughout all of Mitzrayim. Who can I find that connects me back to my family? And this is the girl that he chooses to marry. I look once again, source 14, at the name dreaming of Menashe, and I realized something else. When you say, thank you, Hashem, for letting me forget, what that means is I haven't forgotten. That's the first thing on my mind. You'd think that he would say first Ephraim's name, thank you, God, for the success I have here, if that's what he was thinking about. But instead, that's secondary to Yosef. What's most important to Yosef is, thank you for letting me forget, but of course that means I didn't forget. I think about my father the entire time. So then you have to ask, what happened? What happened if Yosef this entire time always wants to be part of his family? What happened when they come down to Mitzrayim? And I look again at the Psukim, source 15, and I see there's repetitive language. Vayakirem, Vayakar Yosef. He recognized them. He recognized them. It makes me wonder if what's happening here is that when every person came down to Mitzrayim, when he interpreted Paro's dreams, he realized everybody's going to come down, so my family's coming down. So when everybody comes down, he's looking at them. Are you Reuven? Are you Shimon? Are you my brother? He's looking and looking, and finally he recognizes that they are here. Vayiskor Yosef as chalamot asher chalam lahem. I can read totally different again, because yes, vayiskor can mean I forgot something and now I remember. But vayiskor lo kimitz Noach, I don't think God forgot Noach in the teva, the only man alive. What vayiskor means is in that moment of time, it's time to let him out of the teva. In that moment, it's coming true. Vayiskor to chalamot can mean I've been holding on to these dreams this whole time. In this moment, I now see the dreams are coming true. King, the first thing he said was, wow, now I know my dreams will come true. Now I know that I will have my brothers come down and bow down to me. The Abarbanel in source 17 has a fascinating answer, which is Yosef just wanted answers to a lot of questions. He actually doesn't hurt them in any way, but really what he's trying to do is get information out of them. It's a nisayon, says the Abarbanel, to figure out what really happens on that day, what's going on, are they the same people they were before? And this is certainly brought down by the Akedat Yitzchak and Nechama Leibowitz, which I gave you a beautiful quote from her. You can read it inside on your own, but her idea is that he wanted to accomplish tshuva for his brothers. He wanted to make sure they could even accomplish azivas achet. And therefore, he wanted to make sure they had the same opportunity to hurt him again, and they don't. The problem is he's the second to king of Egypt, so how can they have that opportunity to hurt him? That's impossible. There are guards. They would stop him. So he creates the scenario through Binyamin, the favorite child that he assumes is now taken over his position in the home, and therefore creates a scenario where they could hurt Binyamin. They could get rid of Binyamin, and of course, to allow them the opportunity to do tshuva. But what I thought was interesting is source 18, which is another chart I made for you, which is if you take everything that he does to them, and this is, I guess, the Rabbi Kahn psychoanalysis influence that he's had on me, I think if you look at these two charts, what you see is that Yosef seems to do to his brothers very similar to what they probably did to him. If you look at the first thing, when they come down and he says, you're spies, you always wonder, why spies? Why not something else? And I think it's because earlier in his childhood, he used to tattle on his brothers, and you have to understand that when you tattle on your siblings, what do they probably say to you afterwards? You spied on us. You spied on us on purpose in order to say bad things to Dad. I'm sure they used to call him a spy, so he calls them spies. And of course, they throw him into a pit, so he throws them into a jail. And of course, he says, Ganov Ganavti, you stole me when you sold me down to Mitzrayim, so he makes them into people who steal, giving them back their money. And once again, he favors Binyamin to give them the same scenario of when he was favored, to encounter that jealousy and that hatred once again, to see how they would react. I think what he's doing here could be, as Abarbanel does bring down, revenge, but that would be very difficult to understand. But rather, it's to make them understand. In order for people to encounter each other after long periods of time of being away, especially when there's so much anger and so much hurt, is you have to feel what the other person felt. You have to understand what they went through. So without harming them, he allowed them to feel his emotions. He allowed them to feel what he went through in order for them to come back together. So what we see here when it comes to Yosef is two completely different storylines. Yosef, who has left his past behind, got a new identity in Mitzrayim, wanted to be an Egyptian at that point, had new dreams of leadership in Mitzrayim. Or we have the Yosef who held on tight to his old dreams and his old identity and was waiting for the day for to reunite with his family. Either way, source 19, at that moment after Yehuda's speech, that's where there's this emotional release of Yosef. For either story, it makes sense. V'lo yachal Yosef l'itapek, he just couldn't handle it anymore, and he cries so loud, Vayishmu Mitzrayim, everyone hears. Why? Either this was the moment he's been waiting for his whole life, and here it is coming true, or it's a change to everything he had made himself believe for the last number of years, 22 years around or more, saying, I'm not going back to this family, and all of a sudden everything has changed. No matter what, we see a complete change in Yosef, we see an outburst in Yosef, and then there's a turnaround. Source number 20, he saves the Jewish people. He gives us the land of Goshen, which is labeled Meitav HaAretz, a nice piece of land. Vayikach He feeds his family. If you look through the psukim, you see he charges the Egyptians. They have to give him land. They have to give him money. They have to give him everything. But the Jews, we get it all for free, which of course allows the famous words, vayifru, vayirbu, ma'od, we are able to multiply. And that is, of course, Yosef, allowing us to become the nation of Am Yisrael. Similar to Yosef is the storyline of Moshe, and it's the same question that exists by Moshe, which is when he was in Midian and when he was in the palace, who did he identify with? How did he think that he, who did he think he actually was? And we all know the story, and I'll do it fairly quickly because there are two more shiurim to go. But he's found at the age of 3 months by Bat Paro. He's then returned back to his mom to nurse him until he is weaned. And the question that you have in Source 21, when he's returned to Bat Paro and the words are, Vayihi la leben, he is now to Bat Paro as a son. What was he thinking in that moment? At such a young age, could there be an impression on him that he was Jewish? Could he remember his mother telling him that he was Jewish? Was he old enough? Or did he now think that he is an Egyptian son? Vatikrat Shemo Moshe, he names him, Bat Paro names him Moshe. If you look, the Mefarshim have a debate on this issue. Ibn Ezra, once again, this is a Mitzri name. This is not a Jewish name. We just Jewified it within the Psukim, but it is a Mitzri name. Chizkuni tells us absolutely not. This is a Jewish name. And therefore, either says the Chizkuni, Shenitzgai Rab, but Paro converted herself and therefore knew to name him Balashon HaKodesh, or this was the name given to him by Yocheved, because when Yocheved returned Moshe to Bat Paro said, hey, what have you been calling him for the last 3 years? She said, oh, we named him Moshe. And then Bat Paro says, ah, Kimin Amayim, she see who that fits for me as well. Does he have a Jewish identity or an Egyptian? We're not sure. Source 22, he grows up now. Vayetze Alachav, he goes out to his brothers. And again, we ask, which brothers? Jewish brothers, Egyptian brothers? Well, the Mefarshim ask it too. The Ramban says it's his Jewish brothers. Ki Gidu Lo Asher Yehudi. Everyone, he knew he was Jewish. So therefore, he went out to his Jewish brothers. Ibn Ezra, no way. Hamitzrim, Ki Amarmon HaMelechaya. He went out to his Egyptian brothers. He was living in the palace. When he kills the Mitzri, we have to ask why. Why? What did he identify with, the Jews or the Mitzrim? Says Ramban, of course the Jews. That's why he kills the Egyptian. He remains there. He lives there. Is it because he seems to have no plans? He wants to stay there. This is his new life, his new identity. Or is it because he's stuck there as long as his life is in danger? But if you look at the psukim, he now marries one of Yitro's daughters. He has children with Yitro's daughters. Is this his new life? Is he now have a Midian identity? Or is it that he loves Sipora? There's something about her. He stays with Yitro again because his life is in danger. Or maybe even he stays with Yitro because he found a family that shares his values. Source 25, I gave you Rashi and Ibn Ezra, who point out possibly Yitro is the only person that doesn't worship Avodah Zarah. Maybe Yitro is a Kohen LaHashem, having the same values as Moshe. We ask the same questions about the naming of his children. Look at Source 26. His first son, Gershom, Ki Amar Ger Hayiti Beretz Nachriya, I was a stranger in a strange land. Behorshur says, Ger Hayiti Sham, I was a stranger in Mitzrayim, now I am home here in Midian. Chizkuni says, no, Adayin Haya Moshe Chadash Mekomov Nachshav Ki Ger, I'm a stranger here in Midian. Where is he a stranger? Where does he identify? It's very unclear in the psukim. And therefore, when he decides it's time to go back to the Jewish people, because he is told to do so by God at the Sneh, Source 27, he comes to his father-in-law and says, Veshuv alachai asher b'mitzrayim. Let me go back to my brothers in Mitzrayim. And again, we ask, who are his brothers in Mitzrayim? Does he mean the Jews? And he's told Yitro about his past. Does he mean his Egyptian family? Because he's never told Yitro about his past, as the Chizkuni writes in Source 27, who would tell Yitro about his past when his past is that he murdered an Egyptian and Paro wants to kill him. But even more so, the Malbim, where I bolded, possibly even, and you could, this is incredible, that's found in the Malbim, Hayabidas Moshe Shachar Shigmor Shlichut Zeh Yashuv LeMidyan. Maybe even at that point, Moshe said, okay, I'll do what you want, God, but then I'm coming back to Midian because my identity is really to be a Midian man. I'm not going to live permanently with the Jewish people. So we have these two pictures of Moshe, always awaiting until he can return to his life of being Jewish, or he identifies an Egyptian and maybe even later identifies himself as a Midian. Now, of course, at the Sneh, he needs to make a choice, but we see he continues to grapple with this choice. When Source 28, we have the story of his son not having a Brit Milah. And we have to ask the question, was it day 8? And Moshe, of course, was going to give his son a Brit Milah. Or he was born right before the travel and he couldn't, which is found in Rashi and in the Gemara. But or it could be, as found in the Yalkut Shimoni, that he agreed not to give a child a Brit Milah because he gave into the pressures of Yitro. Or incredibly so, the Shadal that I gave you here in Source 28, that said Moshe had taken on an identity of a Midian man, and therefore in Midian you give a Brit Milah to your child at the age of 13. So his oldest son had a Brit Milah. He was already 13. The youngest was, I don't know, 8, 9, but he hadn't hit 13 yet, so he didn't have a Brit Milah. Moshe had really accepted the identity of the Midianim, and therefore Moshe now had to choose which identity did he want to have. We see it in one more element, Source 29, when he sends away his family. As we know from Parshas Yitro, at some point, Achar Shiluchaha, he sends away his wife and children. He does not send back for them. They seem to appear because Yitro brings them back. But you have to ask, why does he send them away? Is it because he loves them, wants to be part of their lives, but it's dangerous for them to be in Egypt? Or did he realize the contradiction of his Midian life and his new Jewish life and therefore had to send them away? So what we see from here is two possibilities of Moshe in the early days as well. Maybe he didn't originally know he was Jewish or associate himself as a Jewish person, but rather an Egyptian and later a Midian, and then he had to make a change when he became the leader of Am Yisrael, or he felt connected to the Jews the entire time. So we're left with these two pictures of Yosef and Moshe, always identifying with their Jewish families, always believing that they're going to return, or they had new identities. They had a complicated journey, a complicated past, and their life led them back to the Jewish people. But of course, we have to realize once they come back to the Jewish people, they save the Jewish people in an intense way. But I believe always that the text is written in an ambiguous way to allow us to see a third possibility, which is a mixture of the two, a confusion. Life is confusing. Sometimes maybe Yosef thought, I want to return to my family, but sometimes he thought, maybe I don't, because they sold me as a slave. Maybe sometimes Moshe thought, I feel like I'm a Jew, and sometimes he felt like he was an Egyptian, and maybe sometimes he felt like he was a Midian man. And maybe that's what's captured in the text. Vayetzei Lachav, he goes out to his brothers. He doesn't know which one are his brothers. Or Veshuv Alachai, I go back to my brothers. He wasn't sure. And Yosef unsure what he wanted to do when he saw his brothers when they come down to Mitzrayim. There was a conflicting experience that they both had. But the message is clear. No matter how much conflict they had, no matter how much along the journey they had to travel in such an interesting way, at the very end, they use everything they have and everything they learn to save the Jewish people. Yosef dominates Sefer Bereishit. Moshe dominates Shemot through Devarim. Yosef saves us from starvation, allows us to become a nation. Moshe takes us as a nation, takes us out of slavery, and brings us up into Eretz Yisrael and experiences with us Matan Torah. I think that the story of these two men, these two heroes of our past, is to teach us that our true paths in life are not always clear to us. Sometimes we don't know the direction that our life is supposed to take. Sometimes it's just not clear. And on that note, I want to relate it back to Rabbi Kahn. Because I don't believe that Rabbi Kahn knew when he was younger he was going to be what I would call the father of women's Gemara learning. That he was going to have hundreds, if not thousands, of students teaching generations of women Torah. I know he liked to learn Torah. I know he liked to teach Torah. He started teaching men, and the opportunity to teach women came up. And I don't think he knew at that time that that was going to be his life's mission and his life's legacy. You know, last year, or more than a year ago, when we did that online shiur in his honor, when he found out that he was sick, I think there was a surprise to the fact of how many women from all over the world who teach Gemara, who teach Torah, shared with him at the very end of that video that he is the reason that they can. That he is the reason that they can teach Gemara, they can teach Torah the way that they do. And his response at the very end of that whole program was, I didn't know. I didn't know. I think the parallel to Moshe and Yosef, I could take one step further. How did Moshe and Yosef save the Jewish people? It wasn't in one moment in time. They spent day in and day out, Yosef feeding the Jewish people every single day of the famine, allowing us to grow. Moshe day in and day out teaching us Torah and leading us every single day of the journey in the desert. And I think that's the most amazing thing about Rabbi Kahn. It's not the one thing he did. It's that he created this impact because day in and day out he taught Torah. You know, until he was really sick, as someone who directs the program, I could see it, but also someone at Stern who saw him there all the time, because we took on always on the same days, he never missed. He never missed. He really almost never took a day off. Also, students tried, but you couldn't get him off topic unless it was a very rare experience, because he wanted to stick to teaching Torah every single day. He expected rigor, serious learning every single day from every single student. And he insisted on this, not just in his teaching of Torah, but I have to say, as the director of a program that he teaches in, from me, in terms of every decision that we made about GPATS, everything had to be in line with the approach of serious Talmud Torah for women, for every aspect of this program. Over the years, I asked Rabbi Kahn many times if he wavered about teaching women Gemara. Did he want to teach men Gemara? Did he get into trouble for teaching women Gemara? And he always answered me with this amazing smile and this twinkle in his eye, which he always had, that he actually didn't care. He didn't care. He felt that women should learn Gemara, and he believed that the Rav felt that women should learn Gemara, so he wanted to give us the opportunity to learn Gemara at the highest of levels, and that's what he did day in and day out. I am forever grateful to Rav Kahn for taking hundreds of women like myself, who never thought the world of Torah Shabbat Peh was open to us, who never thought we could learn Gemara or even crazier teach Gemara, but Rav Kahn told us that we could. And he taught us how, and he told me, I remember this so clearly, sitting in the Beit Midrash of Stern when I got the job to teach Halacha at Stern, and I said to him, give me advice, tell me what, how to be a good teacher. And he told me the most important thing that students need is skills. So just make sure that every single student, when they leave your classroom, can continue learning, can analyze text. And I think it's those skills that he gave to all of us can be applied not just in learning Gemara, but in learning Halacha, in learning Tanakh. And I can say with certainty, he made me the teacher I am today. And therein, I think, lies the small element of comfort for all of us, and that's the knowledge that his hundreds of students and his thousands of grand students have the tremendous zuchus and the ability of keeping his legacy alive by learning and teaching Torah at the highest of levels, and it is simply because Rav Kahn taught us how. May his neshama have an aliyah.